From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of July, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Gary Schnitke will be here from the University of Illinois to discuss his latest article for the FarmDoc Daily website, detailing the new old era for the price of corn and soybeans. And we'll also talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. September corn for the day settled at 395 and three quarters. It was a penny and three quarters higher. December down a penny and a quarter at 407 and a quarter. And new crop November beans were 13 lower at $10.67. The nearby August down 18 cents. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Hello, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Let's start with, well, I guess it's good to be with me. It's been kind of a rough week, rough few days, in fact, for the corn market and soybeans particularly too. Which one do you want to start with today?
Oh, let's start with corn. The corn market continues to be under pressure. The funds continue to add to their short position. I think that's basically as a result of the June 28th stocks report, which showed that farmers in general are holding on to a bigger percentage of old crop corn than what they normally do. And the funds realize that. And I think with the weather forecast being very non-threatening, the funds have decided that they are going to try to outweight the farmer and see if they can get the farmer to throw in the towel and cause this market to go even lower before the funds buy back those short positions.
Who has the most staying power?
The funds have stayed short for several months. I think, and if you look back historically, they're getting close to not only a record amount of bushels short, but for the length of time that they've been short, this is getting close. So I suppose we could set a record and they could stay short all the way into harvest, and maybe that's what they're doing. I think there has to be some catalyst, though, to get the funds to cover those short positions. We were thinking maybe it could be a weather problem. Well, now with all this rain that we've had this week, that's probably not going to happen. So could we see some demand show up? Could we see the farmers throw in the towel? You know, something like that might get the funds to cover their short positions. But until that happens, it kind of feels like the funds are content to stay short and see how low this market will go.
When will producers be forced to make that decision about throwing the towel in?
A lot of the elevators have installed new DP charges or storage charges the 1st of August or the 1st of September, some not until the 1st of October. So depending on where the bushels are, you'll see some of those bushels get thrown, get the towel get thrown in as we get closer to those dates at the end of each one of those months. But then I've talked to some farmers that are probably going to hold on to two crops. They're going to hold on to the old crop corn through the fall harvest and hope for better prices post-harvest. So we will see some throwing in of the towel at the end of August and at the end of September, but there's going to be some that are probably going to hold on for a longer period of time even than that.
Because you mentioned three different time frames, is it more likely that the strong basis levels in the Western Corn Belt will cause elevators there to have the earlier deadlines?
I think those charges are basically set, ahead of time. Not that they can't change those. I'm sure the elevators would like to get that grain moving sooner rather than later. But since it's mainly in delayed price and not storage, even though the farmer may not sell it, the elevator does have the right to move that grain. Now, if it's in commercial storage, it has to actually stay on site. The commercial elevator cannot move that grain until the farmer actually sells it. But at delayed price or price later or basis contracts, the elevator can move that grain. So, I don't think that that deadline date for DP will make that big of a difference as far as availability. If the basis is good enough, the elevator will move that grain even if the farmer doesn't.
All right, turn your attention to soybeans. What's your assessment of that marketplace and the downturn we've had?
Yeah, the soybean oil market led us lower yesterday. I think we had a 4% drop in soybean oil prices yesterday. Today, it's the meal that's pressuring the beans. There's just not a lot of good. The news yesterday was that the EPA was not going to issue or release its standards or recommendations as far as how many gallons that of renewable biodiesel need to be produced now until after the election. They've kind of kicked the can down the road once again. So that was disappointing to a lot of soybean traders, and that was that accounted for a lot of the pressure yesterday. Today, we did get our first good news in soybeans. China bought 4.8 million bushels of soybeans from the United States for the 24-25 crop year. That's the first purchase of U.S. soybeans for the new crop that we've seen. It's a very, very small number, only about 5 million bushels, but you got to start somewhere. And so maybe this is a precursor to hopefully more demand from China, from the United States.
So on that better note, I think we should stop. Hey, thank you much.
All right. Sounds good, Todd. Thank you very much.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Hi, Gary. Thanks for being with us. You and a couple of others, Nick Paulson and Carl Zuloff, have penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website that's taking a look at the corn and soybean economics for 2024 and 2025. And the headline there is not all that fun if you're a farmer. Back to the new old normal for prices. That'll remind farmers that the last couple of years are out of the ordinary. Can you tell me about how out of the ordinary they are over the historical period you're looking at?
Yeah, if you look at the, and really what we're looking at is in 2022, we had a 654 corn price, according to USDA for the market year average, and 1424 soybeans. Those were well above our averages or plateaus of $4.55 and $11 for soybeans. Those plateaus have been the average since 2006, and we were well above that. You can attribute those high prices, or we're making the argument, you can attribute those high prices to transitory factors. Then those would include the buildup of the hog herd again in China, Ukraine-Russia war, and, you know, generally less than stellar crops in U.S. and Brazil and Argentina for the last couple of years. Those are very similar to the last time we've had high prices, which was in 2012. And then you can go back to like 1995, 2003, and, you know, whenever we've had sort of a price period above those long run plateaus, it's attributed to either a demand shock that doesn't persist or some sort of supply shock. And now we're likely entering a period where we don't see demand increases, or at least we can't anticipate them, and our supplies look adequate, if anything, going more.
How long do the good or upward price shocks generally last?
Yeah, the price shocks, you can sort of think of those being above the long-run average about 2 to 3 years. And then once we no longer, that shock goes away or becomes built into the market, then we have prices for an extended period below those long-run plateaus. So if you're thinking 455 for corn, we're looking, USDA is calling 440 for 2024. It'll be interesting to see what they say this week. My guess is that might be actually coming down some, but we'll see. And the futures markets are calling 2025 425. Again, I think those are based on, adequate supplies, trend yields, maybe even a little better, maybe a little lower, but nevertheless, we're not looking at the supply problems this year at this point. And that's going to lead us back to those below prices below trend. And if history is a guide, and we've seen this going on for at least 60, 70 years.
Yeah, so the below trend timeframes to make the averages look like $11 for soybean at the moment and $4.55 for corn are fairly lengthy, something like 7 or 8 years that producers have to prepare themselves for after a big income series.
Yeah, and again, that's what we observed from history. Like the last one was from 2014 to 2019, which is an extended period. We were below 455 in each one of those years. If you go back a little bit further in history, we were below our what was at that time a 238 plateau from 1996 through 2003-2004. So we do have extended periods below those plateaus, and we don't see those plateaus changing very often. We were, before 2005, we were at $2.38 for corn, $6 for soybeans. After 2006, it looks like $4.55 for corn and $11 for soybeans. And that new plateau happened because of ethanol and also because of our continuing strong export demand for soybeans. So those things continue, we're likely to see these same plateaus.
These are cycles that producers, farmers generally will know about, and that you suggest that, and I'm going to lead into some of this, part of it me saying that in the very beginning of the move down that they have to be ready and willing to use cash reserves to make up for what they're probably going to lose as it relates to a crop. And then what happens?
Yeah, we call this thoughtful use of financial resources. And essentially, you know, we built financial resources during that high price period, and now we either have to use those to weather what's coming up, or make, you know, for some farmers, this is going to be a time to make investments that pay off in the long run. And so, you know, thinking about those things in the long run and realizing that we could see another longer period of low returns is the norm for agriculture, I guess. So, yeah, we've entered that period. It would appear to me that we've entered that period again. They're not looking. I could be surprised, and we could have higher prices in this year, but what those would happen is pretty unpredictable.
Something you did not write about in this article, but that I'd like to hear your opinion on, is how farmers did pricing out farmland during these last few years, actually last decade, and what that might mean going into a low-income era.
Yeah, throughout the period from 2015 through 2020, we actually saw farmland prices about at the levels that they should be, given where returns were, and here's the key, interest rates were. And we had very low interest rates throughout that 2015 through 2020 period. Now we're looking at higher interest rates and probably lower returns, and that's going to, if you believe in fundamental models, put downward pressure on prices. Yeah, and that's not to say that they're going to have a period like that 1980s, but we're just going to face downward pressure on those prices. And it's probably, again, going to be first like the 2014-2015 period, where we, in fact, did see farmland prices on average decline a little bit, not much. And we're probably, again, going to be entering a period where we have stable to slightly declining farmland prices. Again, there's nothing out there that's saying there are going to be large declines. So we'll have to see what does happen to farmland returns. And by the way, 380 corn versus 420 corn makes a big difference on where things are at. So we'll see where that ends up, but also interest rates. And you know, if you're looking at where interest rates are right now, pretty much all asset valuations, stocks, and farmland, amongst real estate and others, will face downward pressures. The good thing for farmland is that other assets are likely to face more downward pressure. And if you think about commercial real estate and what COVID did to the demand for commercial real estate, what you think about some of the stock market valuations, farmland isn't in as difficult as a place as some other asset categories in a era where you're looking at higher interest rates.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist, a member of the FarmDoc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may read more from him on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or look for the article on our website at willag.org today. Let's turn our attention now to the global growing regions and the climate and weather in those areas. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, can you start with the hurricane that came in early for me and talk about the track it took across the Corn Belt and how much rainfall fell, where, and how much good or bad it might have done?
Yeah, Burl, really, in my opinion, hasn't been a terrible event. I mean, we brought some significant moisture in through East Texas and western Louisiana, up through the heart of Arkansas and southeastern half of Missouri, through a big part of Illinois, central and eastern Illinois, and up into Michigan. And now it's up into Canada in Ontario and moving into Quebec. And outside of the southeastern plains, outside of Texas and Arkansas, the rains have been fairly consistent in the range of about 2 to around 5 inches. It's been kind of the rule. Now, a lot of that real estate, we were not exceptionally wet when we got started in that. Now, there's some counties that are exceptional to that. So before everyone starts calling me, I realize that there are some areas that were definitely wetter to start with. But a lot of the heart of the eastern Midwest, I think, should have been able to handle this rain relatively well. Yes, there's some flooding and yes, some areas of standing water. But I think you're going to find that that goes away very quickly, especially with the pattern being what it is. As we move forward now through these next couple of weeks, we're going to have warmer temperatures. We're going to have less frequent rain. It's still going to rain periodically, but we're going to have a lot more warmth around on a consistent basis, and that's going to help to evaporate that moisture fairly quickly. Crop moisture usage is going to go up very quickly, and so I think we will be able to look back on Burl and interpret it as being largely beneficial. Even down in Texas, where the heaviest rains occurred, it was mostly urban country and non-agricultural areas that really took it on the chin as far as the big rains are concerned. And certainly there was no crop country that was involved with excessive wind. So I think it was going to come out looking all right.
You gave us a peek at a couple of weeks out. Do things change once we get into the month of August?
Yeah, August is going to be an interesting month. You know, I think I've mentioned it with you before that we have in the past seen a 45-day repeating cycle of cool weather that goes all the way back to last October. And it was last around in North America in the early half of June. It's due to be in again, possibly, as we go into the second week of August. And I'm very anxious to see if that materializes. If it does, then the ridge is going to stay out to the west in August. It will come eastward before then. So these next 3 weeks, is our best opportunity for bringing the ridge to the east if this 45-day cycle returns. Now, I do think that the 45-day cool cycle is going to be a lot weaker this time, and so its impact on the ridge will be somewhat low, but it will still want to push the ridge to the Rocky Mountains or the High Plains region if it manages to get out of that area in these next few weeks. So I'm thinking that the latter half of July will be a part of our warmest period. And then we're going to get a little cooler in August. We're going to have showers and thunderstorms in the north and east part of the region. and it's going to end up, you know, being a fairly good finish. Now, with that said, that's my official stand, but I've got to tell you that I am concerned that the ridge could settle into the middle of the country in this, these latter days of July. And if the 45-day cycle has busted, which it could very well fall apart because it's the middle of the summer, and a lot of times we can't sustain these cool surges any longer. So if the cool surge is a bust, there's a potential the ridge could set up in the plains and western fringes of the Corn Belt and fester there. And it, then, of course, it's an issue for our soybeans. And so I know I'm just like a typical weather guy telling you, you know, one thing and then turning around and telling you something else. But it is all about that cycle of cool air. And if the cool air is not there or is greatly minimized, then we do have a potential to run into a little bit of heat and dryness issues in the West during the month of August. But right now, because of the behavior of the atmosphere up to this point, I want to be careful not to make that a federal case yet. And we'll just look for a relatively good distribution of rain in the north and east parts of the Midwest, and the West will have a bias towards dryness and a little bit of heat.
Let's close out with an update on Ukraine and Russia and the wheat and corn crops there.
Yes. You know, we've had a dryness issue in the Black Sea region through much of the growing season, and it did hurt their winter wheat crop. And the that crop is being harvested now, so that's not an issue any longer. But there's a lot of spring wheat that is produced just a little bit to the north of this in Russia's central region and in what they call their Volga district. And what's happening right now is that we're seeing a ridge of high pressure building up over western parts of Russia, as well as including Ukraine. And so we're seeing a lot of heat. The temperatures are in the 90s over there every day. And we're seeing very limited rain. And this pattern will continue for 10 days. Now, initially, we already have dryness in the southern part of that region. But what's going to take place over that 10-day period is that we're going to start expanding that dryness northward. And it is going to run into some of the spring wheat production areas, as well as sunseed and corn and some soybean areas. But I'm most interested in that wheat crop because they've already taken a hit with their winter crop. And we're going to be pushing the heat and dryness in during the reproductive process, and it could get interesting. If we do not get a break in the pattern in the last part of July, then that spring wheat is going to end up getting smaller, and that may have an issue, or an impact, I guess, on the marketplace in general, because Russia would have a notably smaller crop at that point in time. So that is something that I encourage everyone to keep a close eye on, because it could be a bit of a wild card for the marketplace.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play our daily programming from the website, or Commodity Week Program 2. That will be delayed this week because of the WASDE report. USDA numbers released on Friday at 11 o'clock, so we'll post it not until after that report is released then. Our theme music for the day is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.